All right, let's get right to it. By the way, Adam Carter in for Chad. Chad had to take the day off today. Happy to be here, especially with the big news. So let's get right to it. As we heard all morning long and just in the news there, Governor Walz signing an executive order that directs the DNR and the Minnesota PCA to stop new environmental reviews, permitting, and leasing work for non-ferrous mining projects up near the Boundary Waters. Let's get our guy Tom Hauser right in here on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Tom, thanks for the time. Has this been anticipated that he was going to do something like this? Had you heard that this was in the works?
Yes, it was anticipated as soon as Congress passed the law. And you may recall, even earlier than that, April of 25, I think it was, President Trump had a similar executive order that was eventually codified by Congress. And we knew all along that the state could step in and put in a roadblock. I know, and you could hear that little bit of sound from Governor Walz in your open about the fight for the future of the Boundary Waters is over. It's not nearly over.
Right.
It's been, as you know, been going on for decades, and it will go on decades more, depending on, of course, who our next governor is. Another governor, a Republican, say, for instance, could come in and reverse what Governor Walz just did, but it was already looking at a years-long process at a minimum, and now this just delays it even further.
That's what I was going to ask you. Essentially, this is just more delay tactics, and the governor's smarter than that. He obviously knows that this isn't the end of the discussion at all, so merely more wrenches in the cog, so to speak.
Absolutely, and even if the governor had not taken this step, and by the way, the important thing about his step is the federal law requires that the state give its approval and participate in the environmental impacts. And if the state does not give its approval and does not even participate in that, the project mining up there can't go on. So it is, but even if the governor had not taken this step, we were looking at a decade, maybe more, before there was going to be any even start of mining up in that area.
The blowback is obvious from the usual people, but this is mining is bipartisan, especially for the DFLers who represent that area, and they were quick to rebuke this move today, too.
Yeah, because you've got two sides of this. It's not necessarily just Republican versus Democrat. It's people who want to protect the environment. It's people who think it means jobs and it helps the economy. And sometimes those people can be in each party.
I
mean, you've got Republicans who want to protect the environment and help the economy. And the same thing with Democrats. It's just a question of how do you do that?
You mentioned the next governor, what the next governor may do. And that raises a very difficult question for Amy Klobuchar. She's kind of remained mum on it so far. She was on with Kathy Werzer this morning when the news broke, and she said she'd have to look into it. It kind of puts her in a tough spot, does it not?
Yeah, it does. On the other hand, maybe not so difficult, given it was a Republican Congress and a Republican president who have been pushing for this. And it has a lot to do with the economy, especially in that important 8th congressional district. It's an important part of the electorate for both Democrats and Republicans. So nothing is really easy on this issue. But for Democrats, for the majority of Democrats, it's not difficult to say we want to protect the areas that are most directly close to the Boundary Waters.
You mentioned the further delay. I would imagine that there'll be lawsuits as a result of this. Are we already seeing that happening, or what can we anticipate to be the next steps from the people who oppose this move?
Yeah, there could be lawsuits, but again, those could take years.
Right.
It's an executive order from the governor. Those are not easy to overturn. You've seen President Trump issue multiple executive orders. Some have been challenged. and the challengers have won. Others have languished in the courts. It's hard to say where this will go, but no matter what happens, there is not going to be mining in the areas that they're talking about for many years to come.
Talking to Tom Hauser, he's on the John Schuster Coal Banker Hotline from KSTP Channel 5. For folks like me who feel like this type of governance isn't really what's intended, where whether it's the president or in this case now the governor essentially doing end-arounds of the legislative process to make these executive orders, am I right to feel wrong about that, or is this simply something that the governor says, look, I've got legal right to do this, therefore I think this is an important enough issue to do that?
Well, I think he looks at it as the president and Congress doing an end around the state of Minnesota by passing this law and the president's previous executive order to begin with that kind of started this whole process. So it is within his right to do it. Did he need to do it? Not necessarily in terms of, you know, the state still has, they could do their environmental review and then say, because of the results of this review, say no, and then it wouldn't happen anyway. But this just further delays that process because now the state review really can't even happen.
For those, and there's been many accusations, primarily from the right, that this is Governor Walz, whose time is almost over, and that he's a lame duck, and this is simply a political move just to thumb his nose at the Trump administration and those who want mining. Are they wrong?
Probably, because this is a step the governor would have taken if it was the fourth year of his first term, if he felt that the Republican Congress and the Republican president were doing something that he believes most Minnesotans are opposed to. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. I do know we may add this to our next survey about where do people stand. It's been a while since we've surveyed opinion on mining, but that may be something that we will do to get an idea of where Minnesotans stand on this. Again, the environmentalists versus those who think this would be a big boost to the economy in northern Minnesota.
Annie Malort, where you are right now? Are you in driving distance of a Chicago handshake, a Malort, and an old style?
No, I'm on my way into the station. I will give you a little preview of what we got coming up at 6.
Yes.
We do have our first general election survey since the primaries. Now, you know, on the primary election results, especially on the Flanagan-Craig thing that we had as a dead heat, and it ended up being Flanagan by 20, which really nobody saw coming. And primaries are notoriously difficult to survey. Survey USA has a pretty good track record on general elections where it's not a question of trying to drill down to who's going to actually show up for a primary and are they going to vote in the Democratic or the Republican primary. This is more straightforward, and we will have our results tonight in the governor's race, the Senate race, and the attorney general's race. And I can tell you two of the three really couldn't get much closer. One of them is not. Can't tell you any more than that, but we'll
come on tonight. Just spill the beans. Nobody's listening. Just give the numbers right now.
And then we'll have our first results tomorrow in the state auditors and secretary of state races, because as you know, Republicans haven't won any of these statewide races in 20 years.
Yep.
And this year, so far, in 4 out of the 5, they've got a they've got an even chance.
Mm.
At this point, now again, this is a snapshot. These polls are not predictions. They just tell you where things stand at any given time. And right now, they're in the hunt.
Let me just say, before I let you go, on that note, because we heard it after last week, where you were right, the polls showed Angie Craig and Peggy Flanagan neck and neck, but it was a blowout. And for the people who say, you can't trust these polls, these polls are way off and they continue to be, what's your defense of that?
And polling is getting more and more difficult because not as many people use landlines, which was an easy way to get a hold of people. Now you have to get them on their tablets and their phones. And I know a lot of pollsters across the country, it's not just here, have been saying they've got to work in a way to find more older voters who often are not on their tablets or their iPhones, and it's harder to get to their landlines if they still have landlines. So they're working on that. But keep in mind, primaries are a lot more difficult, especially an open primary state. And our previous polling results have been pretty close to the actual results at the end of an election. Now, this year, again, with fewer and fewer people having landlines, could that change? Maybe. But I think you'll see some consistency in our results that show they are clearly not skewed one way or another. And you'll just have to see, and then we'll know more in early November how good the polling is. But primary polling, way different than general election polling. So we're hoping for better, more accurate snapshots in the general election.
So just repeat again, the top, so you have three of the top offices, right? That two out of the three are very close. Can you just reiterate what that is? Because we'll do a little guessing game later in the show.
Tonight we have Senate, Gov, and Attorney General. We'll have those three tonight. And two out of the three, very competitive right now. And remember, it's only August, so things are going to change. We've only begun to see the general election wave of TV ads and internet ads and everything else. So a lot of this can and will change between now and November. Plus, we haven't had any general election debates yet. Those still have an impact on people when they get to see them side by side, especially if you can get them statewide on television in prime time, which we're trying to do at Hubbard Broadcasting. And we'll see how that all pans out as this campaign season unfolds.
Excellent. Tom, thank you for jumping on with us at the start. We appreciate it, my friend.
Okay, Adam, talk to you later.
Tom Hauser from KSTP Channel 5. We'll get to the mining issue again later. Arnie Carlson, who's been extremely vocal against mining, against the Walz administration, against all lawmakers who he says have been shills for the mining companies. We'll get his reaction to what the governor did. That's coming up at 1:08. But let's stick with that. So three polls that are going to be released tonight at 6, the attorney general's race, the governor's race, and the U.S. Senate race. Hauser says two out of those three are extremely close. So which one isn't? 651-461-9226 out of those three races, U.S. Senate, governor, and Minnesota attorney general, which of those three is not close? 651-461-9226. Your reaction, my reaction, Dave's reaction, our guesses, that's coming up next on CCL. Do we have a theme today?
We always have a theme.
Okay, I was going to say,
on.
I thought maybe you decided to mail it in because
no.
Chad had to take the day off. You got Adam Carter here, noon to three. I'm the buffoon at noon today.
Thank you for thinking so little of me.
I'm sorry. I just figure I wouldn't care. I mean, if you want to just mail it in, go ahead.
I'm going to mail it in. No, right. No. I'm going to have a theme tomorrow too. Got a ball game.
A ball game.
I'm still
going to
have a theme.
in your mind, you'll be like, oh yeah, that's a good one.
Any idea?
Come Together.
Yep.
By the Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
Come Together.
Don't think about the song.
Don't think about the song.
Don't think about.
It's about the Beatles.
Instrumental moment happened with the Beatles on this day in 1962.
1962, instrumental moment.
Kind of a musical pun there. Instrumental. See what I did there?
Uh-huh. I have no idea.
Young man named Richard Starkey.
There you go.
Played behind the boys from Liverpool, played the drums for the very first time. And I'm sure you know it. You were probably there. It was at the Royal Horticulture Society's annual dance event.
I never missed it.
Yeah.
I never missed it.
So we've got, starting with that one, we've got music from bands who have fired a drummer.
Oh.
Pete Best. See ya!
Yeah. So they had to have fired the drummer, not lost the drummer.
Said, hit the road, Jack.
Got it. So, like, Spinal Tap wouldn't be played because we know they tragically lost many of their drummers. Gardening accident, choked on somebody else's vomit. John Stumpy Peeps.
What a great bit.
I know. So these are drummers who were fired.
Yes. Right. Bands who have said, we can't do it buddy. Get out.
I like it. I like it. So we just heard Tom Hauser. My thanks to Tom Hauser from KSTP. We were talking about the big news of the day, the governor's executive order stopping new permitting for mines. We'll get into that topic more throughout the show. But Tom said was doing a little good tease for the 6 o'clock news tonight where they have new polling coming out on the top three races, the governor's race, the U.S. Senate race, and the attorney general's race, where Tom says two of the three are very close. One is not. And let's guess which one is not close. And almost everybody to a texter is saying it's the governor's race. And that is conventional wisdom would be that the governor's race at this point is not close. Although, that being said, I think Lisa Damith is going to surprise a lot of people. And I think this race certainly will get much tighter and much closer. But that the U.S. Senate race and the attorney general's race at this point are very close. I would anticipate that is probably the factor, that that is the case. What do you think?
I would be shocked if it was anything else. I just looked back at the last AG election because I knew it was close, but I forgot just how close. Ellison beat Jim Scholz, the Republican challenger,
correct,
in 2022. Do you remember how close?
Was it 2 percentage points?
Within one.
Within 1 percentage point.
50.37 for Ellison,
right.
49.53 for Scholz.
That, I mean, okay, so the dark horse could be, the shocking result could possibly be, let's say the governor's race is close, let's say the U.S. Senate race is close, and let's say Ron Schutz, who is the Republican candidate for attorney general, has a sizable lead over Keith Ellison. Would that shock you?
It would greatly surprise me.
I was going to...
It might shock me. I mean, just... Keith Ellison is a just polarizing figure in this state,
yep,
for whatever reason. He always has been since he was first running for Congress.
Correct.
And, you know, I mean, just looking at back at how close it was in 2022, and now we have all the fraud, pin as much or as little on his office as you want, and that very much depends on where you sit politically.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that one has to be a nail biter right now.
For sure.
And look at the two other races, Tafoya versus Peggy Flanagan, Peggy being seen as more to the left, Michelle being a very visible, popular person, celebrity. Yeah, it certainly seems like even in a left-leaning state, more people are going to say, hey, that Michelle Tafoya, a little bit more moderate perhaps than some of the other Republicans
pro-choice
that have been running.
Yep.
I could certainly look at that versus
absolutely
the governor's race. It might end up close, but when you've got Big Bad Amy in there, who hasn't had
Big Bad Amy, that's going to be the new slogan. Big Bad Amy.
And I don't mean that as a slight. I just mean the way her elections have gone every single time. And yeah, she has not faced the best, the strongest competition Republicans have put up there. Lisa's probably the, if not best, right up near the best candidate she's had to face.
Probably,
It's still Amy Klobuchar in this state.
Correct.
And this state still loves Amy Klobuchar.
Yep. And somebody says, I voted in the Democratic primary to pick the weakest candidate to face Republicans. I voted for Flanagan, but will vote for Tafoya and mostly Republicans in the election. I know there probably were those people that said, I'm going to go vote because I'd like to see Michelle Tafoya, so I'm going to vote for Peggy Flanagan. That isn't the reason that she won by 20 points.
No, that would be a heck of a lot of Republicans.
That did not happen, and there were too many close races on the Republican side that I don't think too many people decided to do that. But, yeah, even though Peggy Flanagan beat Angie Craig handily, I think that is a very close and will be a very close Senate race. Just texters on which race isn't close. Governor's race, not close. Favors Klobuchar. Governor's isn't close. Governor's. Somebody says, unfortunately, I think it's the Senate and AG office races that may be close, which bums me out because I don't want Attorney General, because I don't want an Attorney General to be a Republican. My guesses would be the Senate and governor's race are close. Attorney General, I have a hard time believing anybody would want Keith Ellison back in there. That's what I'm saying. I'm not anticipating that it's the Attorney General's race that's close or that isn't close, but if it were, it would be surprising, not shocking, however, if the Republican candidate maybe had a sizable lead there. Hi, Adam. No question. Governor's race only, one not close. Klobuchar well ahead. My guess is that the governor's is the poll that's not close. Klobuchar with a sizable lead. Easy, Adam. Governor can be called now. I don't think he can call it now. Put Klobuchar in permanent marker as the next governor of Minnesota. She won't be able to do anything either. She'll win by a landslide. Political system cannot be fixed. Need a new system. I'm not ready to put her name in marker. I think this is going to be a much closer race than many people feel like.
Like a washable Crayola.
Yes, sure. Or erasable pens.
Yeah, that's
like
fine.
Kind of a thing. And
something the eraser.
Never really got rid of. Like, yeah. You could still see the pen.
You get like mark. The Mr. Clean magic eraser if you need to, but you can still get it off.
Yeah. I'm sure Amy is well ahead of Lisa at this point, but Pillow Man was way ahead of her, too. These early polls do a disservice to all the voters and candidates. I think Amy Klobuchar is probably the one that isn't close. I think she's pretty simple, so she's going to take some independents. She's certainly done that. Another text, go Lisa. I think the governor's race isn't close, but the Senate and AG will be very close. Public safety should always be the number one priority, but Republicans just don't understand that. Corporate greed and so-called personal freedom during the pandemic were more important to these radical Republicans. I think outstate and a lot of the Twin Cities have had enough of Ellison. I think Ellison will have to answer about the fraud, right or wrong, whether he could have done anything about it. Ron Schutz, there's no L there. Ron Schutz is a terrible candidate. I cannot imagine him being that far ahead. He'd make a terrible AG, and Minnesotans won't stand for it. I don't know enough about Ron Schutz. Yeah, somebody says to pronounce Schutz. I apologize. I don't know enough about Ron Schutz. Obviously, I mispronounced his name, so I need to get in there and delve into what he's all about. Mike Lindell write in, somebody says. That's going to be the shock. Mike Lindell still somehow will be way ahead in the polls. Because people can't get enough.
Coming in at 70% of the vote.
I'm right here. All right. Ask Adam anything. I was going to be here anyway, so why change up a good thing? And you know what? Since I'm actually controlling the questions for Ask Adam Anything, we might get to your question
today.
What a concept.
Whoa.
So let's go.
Still late, however.
Well, it's still late. Well, you know, I just don't know how many people really want have really questions for me. I'm not that interested.
You're very popular.
Or am I? 651-461-9226. I want calls. I want texts. You want to use the voice message system on the Odyssey app? Go for it. It's Ask Adam Anything with Adam Carter. Asking Adam Carter questions. Come stay for the fun next on CCO. All right, here we go. I am not Chad Harmon. I'm Adam Carter, and I will be facilitating Ask Adam Anything. Adam, are you ready for the questions? Yes, Adam, I am. Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here, and my God, you look gorgeous today. You smell great, and you are a handsome man. Well, thank you very much. I so appreciate that. By the way, Adam, it's Twins Ticket Tuesday today, so before the show ends, we'll be giving away Twins tickets.
Give the details on that quick, if you wouldn't mind.
Yes. Dave, please.
Yeah, well, it's presented by Luther Key of Bloomington, as
Love
we
Luther
note,
Key.
LutherKeyofBloomington.com.
I just saw Jason with a sedan talking about the sedan life. I love a good sedan.
Is that a life? I didn't know sedan life was a life.
I think, yeah, it's okay. Not as popular as it used to be, but I think there's still a place for a good sedan.
Okay, that's fair. That's fine. Anyway, four pack of tickets we're doing today. Friday, August 28th would be the ball game. Happens to be the Twins host, a little division rival, Chicago White Sox. Could
That's
be some
the
stuff
surprising
the
Chicago White
Absolutely.
Sox.
Absolutely. It's also Yacht Rock okay. night at Target Field featuring right. live Yacht Rock music. And, of course, because it's the Friday, you get the $2 beers, the $2 dogs, the $2 snacks. So listen for the thing. Be the third caller when you hear it, and we'll send you over there with four tickets. Right. Or else, Windering Jason, or else just go to twins.com/tickets and get them yourself.
Are we over Yacht Rock?
I've never been in.
Oh, really? See, I liked Yacht Rock. I grew up, the group of friends I had, we always had an affinity for those songs. And then it became huge, like Yacht Rock.
Okay.
And it finally kind of got recognized. And then I feel like we've kind of beat it into the ground.
I don't think we're quite over it yet. I was at Treasure Island on July 3rd. They always do a big outdoor block party
sure.
thing.
Yep.
Live music, usually some sort of cover band, something mm-hmm. like that. And this year, the cover band was Yachtly Crew, bringing you all the Yacht Rock hits. And believe me, the people were going nuts.
Now, did they didn't do like Motley Crue songs in yacht rock style.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
That would be fairly creative.
I would enjoy that for like two tunes. Like, I think I'm
girls, good. Girls, girls, girls. Like Michael McDonald singing. On the Sunset Strip. Girls, girls, girls. Now I've got an idea for a band.
Yes, exactly. Yachtly no, crew. It was. Yeah, although they did close, I want to say with an. Oh, like a Black Sabbath or Ozzy tune. I can't remember what it was, but it was some, you know, something actually heavy metal something, but it was mostly they stuck to your Steely Dan and your, you know.
So Twins Ticket Tuesday coming up, Yacht Rock Day. So let's get to the questions here for Ask Adam Anything, and please be a part of this. 651-461-9226. I'll just go right from the start. Adam, would you write in Mike Lindell? I would not write in Mike Lindell for Dog Catcher. And, that's the go-to. And I wouldn't vote for that guy for Dog Catcher. I don't think we elect dog catchers anymore. But if we did, I would not write in Mike Lindell's name for anything. Adam, is it okay to throw raw eggs at other vehicles when the driver is using their smart device and causing possible accidents? We used to egg for homecoming back in Hastings. And I'll think about bringing that back. What are your thoughts? As much as I am opposed to distracted driving, the rate at which it continues is ridiculous. So a guy the other day I'm following, he had his phone, both hands on the wheel, but he had his phone in between his two hands. And as he's steering, he's like watching something phone, just making it blatantly obvious. And while if I saw that individual get his car egged, I would probably chuckle. Unfortunately, I think that is probably illegal. So I don't advocate using illegal methods to combat illegal activity.
At the very least, you better have a passenger doing the egging, because if you're the driver and you're tossing eggs, you're just as distracted.
Absolutely. So, no, I do not want that to happen.
Plus, are you going out with just a dozen eggs in the car just looking for folks, or you just happen to have eggs there?
No. Full disclosure here, I was cut off one time coming back up north from ice fishing, and I don't know what happened. The people who cut me off must have mistaken me for a different vehicle that they had an interaction with, because these people were like screaming at me and giving me the finger, and then they started like throwing stuff back at me.
The show
could be but I will admit to this, I'm not proud of it, but I passed them then eventually, and I reached behind the seat. I had my bucket full of minnows. I reached in, grabbed a handful of minnows, rolled down the window, tossed handful of minnows onto the car behind me.
Wow.
Killing those, yes, I did. Innocent minnow lives were lost. Yes, and that, I'm sorry. That's the only real violent incident of road rage I've been involved in. I think the statute of limitations has run out.
Minnow abuse.
Adam, what's the strangest, oddest product you did a commercial for in your radio or television career? That's a great question. I don't want to disparage any of the, by the way, I could use one right now. As that tank is pretty empty right now, so if you're listening, you want to advertise a great product here on WCCO Radio. If you want to sponsor Ask Adam Anything, actually sponsor Dear Jordana, I'm open for that. It would probably be like a weight loss product where I was instructed to like take this tonic, and it was supposed to, you know, that was the key to weight loss. I don't think it was.
Take this tonic at 3 p.m. Yes. Don't eat anything before bed. And I swear, that tonic will just...
That was Dark Star. Body Solutions was the one back in the day. All you got to do is take a teaspoon at 6 p.m. and then don't eat anything for the rest of the night. And then wake up and don't eat anything until about noon. The weight will just come falling off. It'll melt off.
Ah, that tonic is amazing. Right. How does it do it?
Right. Adam, what is one last thing you want to sneak into summer before you turn the page into fall on September 8th? That's right, the Fall Classic, as I call it, the State Fair, soon to begin.
I say for you, fall begins, what, August 27th, right? Day one of the fair? Or
yeah,
do you
day
wait
one to- of the fair. I think the fair is fall. I think you're at the fair.
We've got nine more days.
Summer. Yeah, we got nine. So what am I going to do in the 9 days left of summer that I haven't done? You know, I haven't spent a lot of time at all on a lake this summer, which is really unfortunate. I hope to get some lake time in, but we'll see if it happens. You got any big last-minute things to do for summer? Now, you're kind of, you just did your week up at the lake, right?
Yep, spent a week at the lake, so got a lot of lake time there. Try to get it's not our boat, it's still the in-laws' boat technically, but try to get out there at least one or two more times.
Yeah.
We've accomplished a lot. It's actually been a fairly productive summer.
Good.
Getting to...
That's a good feeling, isn't it? When you wind down, you're like, wow, we did a lot this summer.
Maybe a water park trip.
There you go.
I haven't been to a water park in a long time. Do some slides with the kids. That'd be fun.
I haven't been to a water park in a long time either. Like a legit one.
Yes.
You know, you've been to the hotel ones where they might have a couple slides or a lazy river. I want to go to the one where that has the big wave pool. That, you know, kicks out the 4 or 5 foot waves.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Give me a lazy river.
I do like
just
a lazy
hang
river.
Hang on the lazy river.
Yep. Have maybe a little kind of rapids in it to get your heart pumping a little bit.
Okay. Yeah.
More texts. Let's go. Let's take a break. We'll come back with more of your texts. If you want to call in to Ask Adam Anything continues on the other side of this break. Adam in for Chad on WCCO. Your Linda's Construction Time Check. That would be 12:54. Time to check and upgrade your roof with GAF Asphalt Shingles backed by a 50-year-old non-prorated warranty on labor and materials. They bounced their drummer too, huh? Guns N' Roses?
They did.
Steven Adler, was that their drummer?
That's correct.
Bummer. We continue. Sorry, Steve. We continue with Ask Adam Anything. Let's get to Mike here, who's called in. Mike, my friend, what is your question?
Howdy. Well, now that we own the Strait, what do you think about a nice fishing trip over
fishing
there?
Fishing trip. Let's go. How about the next governor's fishing over at the Strait of Hormuz?
There you go.
Yeah. I'm open.
Tuna, mackerel, grouper.
Right. We'll have shore lunch on Karg Island. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Let's rapid fire these questions. Adam, you're in the radio business. How many grooves in a 45 record? 45, maybe? I have no idea. Adam, do you shower in the morning or after work? Always in the morning. Adam, what's your shoe size? Usually an 11.5, but lately I think my feet have gotten larger as I've gotten older. I'm now like a 12 more often than I'm 11.5.
There is only one groove on each side of a 45 RPM record. It is one long, continuous spiral that starts near the outer edge, winds towards the center lip.
If I would have thought about that for a little bit, I probably would have figured that out.
Shame on you.
The needle always ends up in the middle. Adam, do you back into a parking spot or drive right in? I'm anti-backing in crowd. If I've got time to back in, I'm going to back in. If there's like 17 cars behind me, I won't. I'll try to pull in. But this hate of people who back into spots, I think it's ridiculous. What other do we get here? This is a good one. Adam, I recently caught a 29-inch walleye up in Canada. What's the largest you've caught?
Wow.
I've never caught a 30-inch walleye. I've had, I think, 2 29-3/4-inch walleyes. But the 30-inch is the magic number. In fact, there's a guy who was my fishing guide one year for the governor's opener, a guy by the name of Randon Olson, who was a fantastic guide. If you're ever in the Otter Tail area, look up Randon Olson. He's a great guide. He started a Facebook called the Not Quite Dirty 30 Club, with people who are like me, who've been fishing walleyes their entire lives and never have cracked that 30-inch walleye.
The 30's the magic number.
30's like the magic number for a nice
any
walleye
angler.
Yep. And I've never caught a 30-inch walleye. So one of these days, hopefully, I'll finally get off that snide.
You couldn't just fudge it on the 29 3/4.
No.
Pull this.
No, I'm an ethical fisherman. Adam, if you could be any lead singer for any rock band, which rock band would you choose? Oh, I can't hit the high notes. So the Stones, maybe. Yeah, I can do the peacock walk, Mick Jagger. I'd have to think about that one a little. I wouldn't want to, but here's my answer. I wouldn't want to be the lead singer. Give me the skills to be a lead guitarist.
Okay.
That's what I want to do.
Let's picture you as a bass man.
I can do that too. Boom, 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 just boom, boom. Slapping the bass, just thumbing it. We will take a break. Back to the top story, Governor Walz and his executive order on the boundary waters and mining. We'll talk to former Governor Arnie Carlson, who obviously has always had some very strong thoughts about that. He'll join us after the news on CCO. Adam in for Chad. Adam Carter in for Chad on this Tuesday. Happy Tuesday. It is Twins Ticket Tuesday, and that means before the show is over, you're going to hear that Twins sounder that is unique to the Chad Hartman Show. And if you are the 728th caller, you will get a 4-pack of tickets to a week from Friday, August 28th, when the Twins host the Chicago White Sox, the Southsiders, in a pivotal division series. Hopefully it's pivotal. That Friday is also Yacht Rock Night at Target Field featuring live Yacht Rock music, $2 beers, snacks, and hot dogs. Tickets available now at twins.com/tickets. Twins Ticket Tuesday, always driven by Luther Kia of Bloomington. Visit the new showroom today or always at lutherkiaofbloomington.com. Trying to get in touch with former Governor Arnie Carlson, and hopefully we'll do that before the show is over, but things happen sometimes, miscommunication, and it's okay. I was reminded of something today that happened 16 years ago today. Actually, I looked at it. It was actually yesterday, but I think it was a two-day event. And I'll give you a chance to think about that. So this would have been August 17th/18th of 2010. Something unique happening to Minnesota and something in the sports world. I'll give you a beat to think about it. And it leads me to this question I'm going to ask you right now. Either in somebody you know's life or somebody, a celebrity's life, an athlete's life, when has somebody come back when they shouldn't have come back, when they stuck around too long? And here's why I'm asking that. On this day in 2010, do you remember? I was still a news reporter at WCCO Radio, and I was waiting at downtown St. Paul Airport because we thought that Brett Favre would be flying back into the Twin Cities. He had been picked up in Mississippi. I believe it was Jared Allen, Ryan Longwell, another on-air show meeting. Should we just talk about this on air?
Yeah, Governor Carlson should be calling in any second.
Okay.
We're having trouble connecting on his phone, but he's calling us right now.
Well, let's do this. Should we? Let's get him on, and I'll save it. I'll save that conversation. Live radio, folks. Sometimes things work out. We have to shuffle things around. I'll bring that topic back. But the reason we wanted former Governor Arnie Carlson on the show is obviously he has been a vocal opponent of mining near the Boundary Waters for many years. And now with this news today that Governor Walz has signed this executive order prohibiting new permitting for mines, we wanted to go to Governor Carlson, who has been very critical of Governor Walz. Governor Carlson, thank you so much for the time today and joining us with a laugh. I appreciate that. I'm the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. All right, your reaction to Governor Walz's actions today, I guess victory, relief, or what took so long?
Well, wonderful. Absolutely delighted. We have to come to grips with the enormous harm that comes from sulfide mining. And right now there's three projects, and Governor Walz, much to his credit, has knocked one of them out, and that still leaves two, and they have the potential to release arsenic and mercury into the waters of the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River, and that will affect the drinking water of over 60 million people. So we have to take care. The medical community for over a dozen years has been petitioning Minnesota government, Democrats and Republicans, to please include in the mining laws a health impact assessment. And it has never been done. There hasn't even been a single hearing by the legislature, again, Democrat or Republican, on the subject. And that has to end right now. And I hope the governor's step opens the door to public discussion and some real improvements in how we permit others to work with our water.
So this would be an examination of the physical health of people who live in that area. As opposed to just the damage it would do environmentally. This would be actually the harm it would cause people who live in that area. What don't people know about that you think they should know?
Well, what the Minnesota medical community is deeply concerned about, and this includes the University of Minnesota, the Mayo Clinic, they want a health impact study to make sure that our drinking water is pure and it's healthy. There has never, ever been a sulfide mining operation that has not caused irreparable environmental damage. And that quote, by the way, comes from Walter Mondale. And unfortunately, what's also entered into the picture is the role of big money. And let's not kid ourselves, the American political system is very heavily influenced by the power of moneyed interests. And as a matter of fact, one of the mines, New Range copper nickel mine is owned by Glencore. And I believe it was in 2022 that they pled guilty in U.S. federal court to charges of bribery of public officials and market manipulation, and agreed to a fine of $1.1 billion. And yet we in Minnesota are allowing them to seek a permit, allowing them to potentially harm Lake Superior and therefore the entire Great Lakes system, and yet we don't have a single public hearing, either in the legislature or any reforms being submitted by the governor. None.
When you were governor, where was this issue? Did you face were they trying to do this when you were governor, or what has changed from that time until now?
What a curious question. My wife asked me the same question. So I did look it up. No, this thing really started back around 2005, 2006. And you may recall the first episode involved the Land Exchange Board when Rebecca Otto was state auditor, and she voted against the land exchange that permitted what then was has become known as the Polymet mine from being able to acquire state lands. And for that, she was frankly drummed out of office. That's how powerful the mining interests are. She paid a tremendous price, and I hail her courage. But it goes back roughly to 2005. The medical community became a strong spokesman over the last 12 years.
You have been extremely critical of Governor Walz for his past decisions and his past actually, cozying up to these mining companies. Is this action too little too late from him?
No, fortunately it's not. The real question is, will the rest of the Democratic Party and hopefully the Republican Party pick up on this and say no? The protection of Minnesota's healthy water is paramount over all else. Right now, about 53% of our waters are impaired. And that's a study that comes from the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. So over half our waters are already lost. And we cannot afford any further damage to them. So I hope both political parties will say no. The health and well-being of Minnesotans is absolutely paramount. And it's certainly a lot more important than campaign contributions.
What are the chances that that happens, though? I mean, I don't see any avenue right now in this country to say an appetite for like really reforming political contributions and siding with companies over people. I don't see an end to that.
Well, it's a tough road, but it's either that or we don't have a democracy anymore. And frankly, we don't have a country. I mean, that's really what's at stake. This election is unbelievably important. It's up to us, the people, to sharply question our candidates. What's interesting about this interview is that it's been with me, a former elected official, and not with the current elected officials who are seeking re-election. Isn't it interesting how Governor Walz took action, and yet all those seeking re-election or seeking election have been silent?
Yeah. Or complaining against it, saying that this is the wrong move.
Oh, really? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, well, Lisa Damoth saying that this is the wrong move. Of course, Tom Emmer, Pete Stauber, they think this
is. Oh my gosh! They
think this is just playing politics. That this is Governor Walz, who's a lame duck governor, simply saying, thumbing his nose at the Trump administration and thumbing his nose at a congressional decision which opened this area to mining.
I am stunned. I am stunned at that. I just cannot imagine any human being serving the well-being of others, saying no to the health impact study, saying no to to healthy drinking water, and putting money above all else.
Texter says, Governor, forgive me because I'm not familiar with this, but Texter wants to point out that the Eagle Mine in Michigan is a similar safely operating non-ferrous mine. Do you know of that, and is that true?
I don't know of it, and if it were true, the advocates of mining would have used that as an example of how it applies to Minnesota. and they certainly haven't. The result is, as I said, I think since roughly 19, well, certainly for the last 10 years, there's not been a single hearing in the legislature, whether it be Democrat or Republican control, on anything that in any way, shape, or form reforms our mining laws.
There, you've heard the arguments, too, that this is the a part of Minnesota that needs these jobs, that needs this influx in development. What do you say to that, to people, the very real need for folks up there to you know, get a job and have a gainful employment?
I think that's a very legitimate concern, but it doesn't mean we poison our water for it.
Yeah.
What it does mean, we start to look at some creative ways in which we can induce industry and business to come to impacted areas of Minnesota. One would be, and I've suggested this a long time ago, and it hasn't produced any kind of discussion, taking operations of government, particularly parts of the DNR, the Department of Natural Resources, and maybe pollution control, and moving some of their operations up north. One that would be closer to the clients that they serve and the environment that they serve. And two, I think government operations should be dispersed around the state. And I think that's a start. The other one is to start to toy with the idea of tax inducements. So there's all sorts of ways in which we can grow the economy and grow jobs without destroying our health.
Lastly, and I thank you for the time as always, sir. I follow you on Facebook, and I see your posts from time to time, and I saw a recent one where you were disputing somebody had apparently said you endorsed a candidate, and you were saying you hadn't done that. But I want to ask you, when it comes to the governor of Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, or Lisa Daymuth, or U.S. Senate, Peggy Flanagan, Michelle Tafoya, are you endorsing any candidates at this point? Who do you like?
At this point, I am not endorsing. Okay. I've written letters to all of them and asking them to respond to certain inquiries, among them, by the way, the water issue. And so I'm waiting for responses to come back as to what they're going to do to improve the well-being of Minnesotans. And so I think, like all Minnesotans, I'm going to hold my voice back and wait and see what they decide to do. I think the fact that the Republican candidate for governor has come out against the actions taken to protect the BWCA, I think that's a disqualifying action on her part.
Can I just ask you one question about your time as governor?
Yeah.
Did you issue a lot of executive orders? I feel like this is symptomatic of a broken system where we have executives, both the president and now here at the state level, who seem to be end-arounding legislative bodies and administering these executive orders. Was that much of a thing when you were governor? And how do you see this kind of governance?
No, I think you're right. I think it's an example, frankly, of broken government. It truly is. We've got to get money out of politics. There's no question about it. I do remember one executive order that was immensely popular, and that's when I closed schools on a particularly frigid day. To this day, people come up to me and say, I love that one. Can you? And matter of fact, I'll tell you a funny story. My daughter, who paid little attention to politics, her classmates suddenly surrounded her and said, oh, can you ask your father if he can close them tomorrow, too?
Was that the 91 Blizzard, Governor? Was that the 91 Blizzard?
I don't know which one. I don't know what it was, but boy, was it popular.
Yeah.
But no, to your point, government and governance is about forming partnerships and working with people and putting together substantive proposals and ideas that truly benefit the well-being of the public. Right now, 83% of Americans don't trust their government, and 85% of Americans are convinced that elected officials do not care one hoot about what they think. That's an enormous divide, and it's largely caused by the fact that elected officials are beckoning more and more towards big money, and that creates a separation with the very people that they're supposed to serve. I mean, I can send emails to elected officials, and rarely do I get a response.
Yeah. Can't get them on the air anymore.
Stunning.
Yeah, we can't even get them on the. I used to be able to work when I worked in the newsroom here. I could call up and get a congressman on the phone in a couple minutes. Now it's like good luck. You can't even get a hold of them.
Yeah, no, we were. You're right, because we as elected officials were very dependent upon you.
Yeah.
But now they're dependent on money so they can run endless ads telling us how virtuous they are.
Let's go. It's me and you. We're going to run next. Let's go. Me and you. Let's announce it. We're going to run again, Arnie. Let's go.
You're wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Governor. I appreciate the time as always, my friend. Thank you.
You bet. Thanks.
Arnie Carlson, 124, will react to what he had to say. I ran a little long, but it's okay because it's former Governor Arnie Carlson on CCO. Thanks to Governor Arnie Carlson for joining us on WCCO Radio. Obviously, he has been, he's not been on the fence about mining in Minnesota. He has been completely against it for a long, long time. So he applauds the move of Governor Walz to sign these executive orders to prohibit the further issuance of any kind of permitting. We talked to Tom Hauser in the first segment of the show today. By the way, hello, Adam Carter, in for Chad today. And you can listen to that on the Chad Hartman podcast. He kind of broke it down for us, saying that this was anticipated for quite a while, especially since Congress kind of overturned the Biden ban, which would have allowed mining in that area, one that Pete Stauber, congressman from the 8th District, kind of spearheaded and was approved by many Republicans and honestly some Democrats who are from that area who are banging the drum of the mine, saying this is a economic opportunity, this is a job creator. And at the same time, we've got plenty of people saying this is going to damage our water system. But Tom's point was, too, Hauser's, is like, take a deep breath, because we are still decades away from any kind of mining operation to happen. And whether it's a decision from the Republican administration in Washington or the Democratic administration here in St. Paul, we're going to have many different leaders after that time. And so just to assume that what is said in what kind of announcements are today or what kind of proclamations are made today that are going to be the law of the land for the next 20 years, I think is extremely foolish and naive to believe that. So, but here's my point, and I was going to, before we got Tom, this is going to be my reaction to this, and I'm curious if you feel the same way. Because if I look at Donald Trump in Washington using executive order after executive order to do things without the consent of Congress, meaning the people that we send there to make those decisions, I damn well better be just as upset if the governor of our state is doing the same thing, even though I might agree with him. Like, I honestly, what I know about this mining, and I know we have a texter who continues to say, no, Adam, Arnie's wrong. The copper nickel mine in Eagle, the Eagle mine in the UP has been operating for a number of years. Is it safe? Blah, blah, blah. I'm with Arnie saying, if jobs is the main point of this and economic development, you can't tell me that there aren't other resources that we can use, other things that we can do to get people to work. And are there, look at the job numbers and the amount of people who have just left the workforce.
Yeah, no kidding.
Just don't want to do any kind of other jobs. Mm-hmm. Like, are these mining jobs or the jobs associated with them suddenly going to be the one that people say, oh, that looks like a great job, and they're going to move up to, you know, Ely or Bowabic to go up there and do that? I don't know. It doesn't seem to me that that would suddenly be a huge harbinger for people to get work. So,
do those jobs, sorry to interrupt, if that were to happen, if the mines were to open, are those jobs going to Minnesotans? Are they going to people from around the country
right.
that mining is correct. Their profession?
Right.
They say, all right, well, I'm heading up to
right.
the BWCA.
Right.
We don't know.
No, we know the company isn't. The company is it's chilly.
Yeah.
So it's going out of the country. It's not even like the dollars would stay in the country. So I have serious speculations about that and serious concerns about the damage it would do to the environment, irreparable damage in the name of a momentary plea for commerce that we might not even benefit from. But the point being, we should have a legislature that makes that decision. And to Arnie's point, he's saying that there's just so much money involved from these folks, whether it's signing those checks to Republicans or Democrats, that it's almost impossible to do that nowadays. Well, then the system is broken, but it doesn't mean I approve of using executive order to do things that we have a state legislature in St. Paul to do. We're going to take a break. 1:32, traffic and weather. Should we eliminate cities? Do we have too many cities in the Twin Cities? Are there way too many cities in the Twin Cities? A reporter from the Star Tribune is suggesting that we might. Let's find out his reasoning after this on CCO. Well, this next topic might seem silly, but is it? We always like good food for thought, thinking in different ways. And our next guest has certainly done that. He is Eric Roper. He is a columnist with the Minnesota Star Tribune. He joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. And I was drawn to the attention of his new video suggesting that we may have too many cities in the Twin Cities metro area. Eric, thank you for the time. Now, is this an idea that you heard or that you came up with and said, hey, we're just maybe a little too crowded here?
I'm sure I'm not the first person to have this idea, but...
Well, if you are, congratulations. Yeah.
Okay. I wrote a column about this last year, actually, and then it came up again when I wrote recently about the redevelopment of Les Bolstad Golf Course in Falcon Heights, and someone at the company said, you know, someone who does social video said, oh, you should do a video about what you said in that column, that we have too many cities, because I wrote that in the Les Bolstad column. And I think that it's a topic that doesn't get enough attention. I mean, it's going to be hard to sort of, change the dynamics of, I mean, we have more than 140 municipalities in the Twin Cities metro area. It's going to be hard to change that. But it's something that when we make decisions and we make policy decisions, like, we have to be very cognizant of the fact that we're one of the most fragmented metro areas in the country. And it really impacts a lot of how things operate around here.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Compared to similar sized metropolitan areas around the United States, how differently are you say much more fragmented? So like a comparative kind of metro areas don't nearly have the amount of communities that we have?
I mean, so there's examples that are like us, like, when I wrote about this last year, there's like a couple different ways that you can slice this. There's a 2010 book about the Twin Cities region and about regionalism. And it says, that book says we have the fifth most fragmented local government structure among the country's top 50 metro areas. And that isn't just cities. That includes like school districts, counties. We have a lot of counties too. And like special government units. So you can break this a number of different ways. I mean, obviously there's places like Pittsburgh, Chicago, have a lot of cities. I think one thing that is especially true here is that not only do we have a lot of cities, but our urban core is also bifurcated. So unlike a Chicago and a Pittsburgh, we actually have two central cities, which then sort of split apart that population. So that makes us a little unique, but certainly we are one of the most fragmented in the country. And again, there's a lot of different ways you can slice this, but we're up there on the list.
And Eric, what are the problems that result because of it? As an example, your video there at Les Bolstad Golf Course, and now how this is a area that's prime for development and it borders so many different communities that there's really not a straight answer on what to do with it. And there's a number of different governing bodies at play. Explain that.
So with the Les Bolstad example, it's an interesting one because here we have a project. It's right next to St. Paul. I mean, it's near a bunch of different cities, Roseville, Lauderdale. And it is really a project of regional significance. It is the largest urban redevelopment site in the metro area. And so that means that, this is a big opportunity for our region. We should be really thoughtful about, especially trying to get some density in there because it's near some major population centers. But ultimately, this is going to get decided by the voters of Falcon Heights, which has a little over 5,000 people that live in it. Falcon Heights residents have already said that they are averse to seeing much more density in this part of the city. And we see this around the metro where cities have this immense power to curtail housing, or at least the density of housing that's being built. And this contributes to the affordability problems we see in the metro. And this is why we're seeing at the legislature attempts to rein in some of that power, because there's been a real understanding of the impact that it's having. But think for a second about the huge array of mayors and city council members, et cetera, that come out of the woodwork every time the legislature gets close to this topic. It's a very powerful force that we don't often talk about. And also the reason why the Metropolitan Council is not as powerful, in my opinion, as it could be, is not as assertive as it could be, because they're up against a huge force from all these municipalities. And then I would just add on to that, sorry to ramble, but, there's also just the sheer inefficiency of it all, right? I mean, how many city halls do we have? How many police departments do we have? How much bureaucracy and additional administrative cost are we layering on by having all these cities? And then on top of all that, there's been studies linking this to income segregation and racial segregation throughout the region, especially through zoning and things like that. So it has a lot of downstream problems. I think people have a lot of pride in their particular city and the name of the city and what have you. But
sure,
we need to be talking more about the problems that come with having so many cities.
We're talking to Eric Roper from the Minnesota Star Tribune. To your knowledge and looking into this, and I'm trying to think, I've obviously lived here most of my life, I unless I'm just missing an obvious example, I'm not sure I can remember a time where, like, we were moving to deincorporate any kind of city or cities had talked about, you know, merging. Is there any kind of precedence for that here?
I don't, you know, there may have been one-off things, but in any large scale, I'm not really aware of anything like that. And I think that, you know, what we did do was that in the 1960s, we created the Metropolitan Council. We created a regional government. And under statute, the Met Council is the second most powerful regional government in the United States. Number one is Portland. But over the years, the Met Council sort of exists in this zone where they're so on the sort of precipice of losing all of their power because people want to get rid of the Met Council that they sort of pull their punches. And so even though we actually on paper have a regional government that is pretty, you know, strong and could maybe sort of, I mean, I think the Met Council should have more authority to coordinate and over land use and all these things where we're seeing sort of duplication. Like, how can we hand more of this off to a regional government, which we already have? And so that was our response as a region, was not to deincorporate or merge cities, but was to create a regional government. And I would just note that historically, Minnesota had pretty lax laws about municipal incorporation, and that's partly why this happened. And those laws, I believe, are somewhat different today. But historically, you know, how places incorporated from being townships into villages, the sort of threshold for how many people needed to live there was quite low. And so that's partly how we end up in this situation. And our response was we needed to create a regional government. And unfortunately, I don't think people have a ton of faith in the Met Council, but we need to reform the Met Council so that people do have more faith in it because it's so important.
I was just going to say that because we're getting texts now. Like, are you kidding me about the Met Council? So make your pitch for the Met Council, especially. You know, people saying it's an unelected body that they think has too much power already. What would be your ultimate vision for the Met Council?
I mean, think of things like I'll just throw out an example here. Like, you know, we think about Lyft and Uber and taxi regulations. Like, these are regional services, but we regulate them on a city by city basis. Minimum wage is another one. I mean, these are the things. These are places that my head goes when I think about where could a regional government be more sort of influential. I'm currently looking at the fact that Blaine is about to build a major pro baseball facility.
$700 million.
Right, to make a whole new destination downtown out in Blaine. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, is there like a regional sort of chessboard here? Like, are we actually planning this out in sort of a logical way? Or is it actually more that cities are sort of on their own and each city is sort of clamoring for as much tax base as it can get, which means they give huge tax increment financing handouts to various companies and what have you. Like, I think that when we look at sort of what cities do to sort of like kind of protect themselves and to protect their budgets, I don't know that it always benefits the entire region or has a regional logic to it. So I understand this complaint about the Met Council. Unfortunately, here I'd say this, like, the person who really controls the Met Council and the chair of the Met Council is the governor of the state of Minnesota. And unfortunately, I don't think I've heard much from our current governor about what his regional vision is. And he's been in office for a long time. And I think that that's part of the issue. I think there are reforms we should make to the structure of the council at a minimum. I think staggering the terms so that each governor doesn't just create a whole new Met Council, but also just like I think we should acknowledge the governor is the sort of the chair is really the leader of the region by fact of appointing the Met Council. And so we should demand our governor to explain their regional vision. And I haven't heard it. And I hope that as we get deeper into the governor's race here, that we hear a bit more from the candidates about what their regional vision is, you know.
Eric, thanks for the time. It's great, and certainly an interesting topic, and thanks for bringing it up and coming on the radio today to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Eric Roper from the Minnesota Star Tribune. Should we just go down the list, Dave, starting with Anoka and stay or go? Anoka?
Going alphabetically?
Going alphabetically. Should we turn this into a wrong answers only? Which cities need to go away?
Let's roll it.
651-461-9226. Which cities here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul greater metro area need to go away or just blend with another city? We'll have your reaction to that after this on CCL. 153, that is your Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to help protect your home from clogs, overflow, and uncontrolled rainwater with LeafGuard brand gutters. Installation labor free in August. LindusConstruction.com. Started out talking about which do we need, you know, 100-some cities in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. Then Eric Roper kind of went into a support for a strong Met Council. And obviously, I didn't know it was going to turn into a conversation about the Met Council, but boy, you bring up Met Council, you get a lot of strong opinions.
Yeah, you do.
And usually they're not good ones because we're talking about trains that go to nowhere, trains that aren't being ridden.
Trains that aren't yet built.
Trains that aren't yet built, unelected officials. But yet we get another text that says this, people would not like to see our region without the Metropolitan Council. I get it. I don't know. I mean, we could do show after show after show every day on the theory of the Met Council and whether or not it's worth it to have. But back to his original point about cities or whether or not we need so many cities, I would argue we do not. And that especially if they have their own city halls. I mean, look at the police. How many departments are finding it difficult to hire officers? Yeah. And how many departments, certainly not just in the metro area, but in outstate Minnesota, greater Minnesota. I said outstate Minnesota.
Careful.
That simply say we can't have a police department anymore.
Would you have guessed over 140 individual towns within whatever, you know, would draw your line, what constitutes the Twin Cities metro area? But I heard over 140. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah. Now, that's all on the fringes, too, where we've got kind of like we just looked at the map during the break, like Willerney. Like Willerney is on the south end of White Bear Lake. And mm-hmm. It's by, you know, Matamidi and kind of between White Bear Lake and Delwood and. But, yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that much. And I think probably some people would argue, because I think, like, Northfield is listed there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is really Northfield considered Twin Cities metro area?
It's getting down there.
That's getting down there.
Yeah.
But, like, Empire and Farmington now, which is just south of me, those are certainly, that's metro area now. That didn't used to be, but that absolutely is.
So let's make a rule right now. If your population is under 5,000, you got to join up with somebody else.
You got to join up with somebody
else. You got to join.
Right.
Yep. Sorry.
Somebody first text, Rosemount needs to go.
Ooh. Wow.
Hilltop. Where's Hilltop?
It's near the top of the hill.
Crystal and Oakdale are armpits of the metro. Jeez. Well, kind of position-wise, yes, if they're kind of inside the, let's say the arms are 494 and 694 going around, or I guess that would be 694 on the top. Maybe they are positioned to be that.
Hilltop, just on the north end of Columbia Heights. Very small, it looks like.
Officially renamed Golden Valley and St. Louis Park into Westopolis. Bill from West St. Paul says, nuke South St. Paul. Wow, that's I would say the other way around.
Okay, buddy.
Buddy boy. West St. Paul, yes, we all realize West St. Paul is not technically west of St. Paul. It's actually south of St. Paul. Edina. Just on general principle.
We're basically all just going back to high school with this conversation, right? All the rivals, get them off the
exactly,
map.
Exactly right, yeah. Minneapolis needs to go. The most dysfunctional major city in the state. Just play a council meeting. It's obvious. Met Council should be dismantled first. Taxation without representation. I know you're giving it plenty of people an opportunity to hate on Minneapolis, but Minneapolis is vitally important. And a Minnesota without Minneapolis would be a pretty boring place to be. Back to the topic. It was 16 years ago today, Brett Favre came back for another season with the Vikings. That didn't go so well. Other people who have come back that shouldn't have. 651-461-9226. We'll get to that next hour. August 18th, 2010. 16 years ago today. The gunslinger back in town. After much consternation, would he return? Would he come back? Vikings were so close to the Super Bowl in 2009. We know how that ended. But Brett, come back. We can do it again. And Brett Favre made the decision. It was very dramatic. We had a private jet flown down to Hattiesburg. Jared Allen, Ryan Longwell.
I think Steve Hutchinson was on
Hutch.
That flight.
Big Hutch.
I think the great story is they show up, they hang out with Brett, they're, you know, having some snacks, drinks, whatever, talking about it. He leaves for a little while. They wonder what happened to Brett. Right. Deanna comes in, Brett's like, oh, he went to bed. Wait, what? Yeah, he went to sleep.
I thought you were going to say he went and got the lunch. Remember, got the bucket. Remember, he showed up with the bucket?
Yes.
Yeah, so Brett Favre came back, and the Vikings were terrible. 6-10 they went that year.
Not good.
Head bounce off the frozen tundra of TCF Bank Stadium against the Bears, and that was it for Brett Favre's football career. But I remember, because it was on my Facebook memory today, where I was one of the reporters waiting at the I think we were at the St. Paul airport thinking that he was going to fly into St. Paul, that the Wilf's plane was coming to St. Paul, when in fact I think it went to Flying Cloud. But that, did we have both years where we had helicopters in the air tracking his ride to Winter Park?
The first, certainly. We all remember that.
Yeah. I mean, that was surreal. That was one of the top five news days that I can remember, being on the side of the field at Winter Park and seeing Brett Favre come out of the tunnel with a Viking helmet on.
I was at home watching all the coverage that afternoon, watching Chopper 5 track the SUV from the St. Paul airport over to Winter Park.
Yes.
My wife comes home. We were just married at the time. Hey, honey, all right, you got to listen to me. No, seriously, this is really important.
Yeah.
Here's what's going on.
Yeah. It was great. And then the first year, as expected, like, oh, my God, he's going to do it. We're going to go to the Super Bowl. But, yes, then he comes back the second year, and it wasn't good.
No.
Which raises the question, other comebacks that didn't live up to expectations or just completely failed. Comebacks that completely failed, whether it's in entertainment, sports, politics. I think a lot of people would suggest that they'd wish that Donald Trump had failed in his comeback. But, no, that is far from an unsuccessful comeback. That is one of the more successful comebacks in any kind, of any kind, anywhere. But I'm talking about the ones that just kind of fell flat on their face. When Michael Jordan came back to play basketball for the Wizards, was it? That really went nowhere, right? That's the one I can think of in sports at the top of the list.
It wasn't a complete, you know, I mean, train wreck. He was a fine player. He wasn't certainly Michael Jordan, but he was, you know, he was serviceable still. Yeah. He was still the greatest player at the tail end of his career. It wasn't like he was a detriment to that team. He just, you know, wasn't the MJ we all remembered.
651-461-9226. Chime in here. Worst comebacks ever. I was trying to think before Susie got on, the media members in this town who maybe came back, maybe after they'd been at a different market or decided to come back to maybe a different station, mm-hmm. whether it's TV or radio.
Jed Hartman?
Well, I wasn't going to say that. I think that was just obvious. Where it didn't go so well. 651-461-9226. Randy Moss returning to the Vikings the second time.
Going to say the same thing.
Randy Moss coming back.
After.
How about Kevin Garnett coming back to the Timberwolves? That didn't really...
No, on the court, that didn't do anything.
Nope.
He was off the court the vast majority of the time. Did that lead to what's going to happen in February with the jersey retirement finally happening and him making up with the franchise?
Yeah.
Guess that's worth something.
Maybe, right. But, yeah, it didn't really do much other than sell a few tickets initially. Yeah, here's a good one for politics. Tim Pawlenty running for governor the third time. 2018 was that?
It did not last long.
Did not last long at all. So that's a good one.
Yeah, he learned he was not welcome anymore.
Somebody says, party. Yeah, Madonna, she thinks 16-year-old boys are still thinking about her. Sorry, Madge. Time to take up Mahjong. I don't know. I mean, has she ever gone away?
Not completely. I mean, the new album has been...
She's certainly not at the level she once was.
Oh, no.
But, I mean, she's... What is she? 60? She's got to be in her 60s,
right? I think she's mid-60s, yeah. But, I mean, new album out. People,
yeah,
at least initially, said, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
Way to go, Madonna.
The basketball team that came back to Minnesota after the Lakers hasn't worked out very good either.
Well, 68 for Madonna, by
68.
The way.
68?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, I don't see her as like a Madonna, big Madonna comeback. I mean, I guess Elvis, right? I mean, Elvis had the comeback special, which was tremendously successful. But after that, it kind of, you know, once he started eating the peanut butter and banana sandwiches and started taking the drugs, things went downhill for the king. Mike Lindell, somebody says. Okay. Did he really go away, though? I mean, it's...
I think ever since he popped up with the MyPillow, he's been around.
I was going to say. Top 10 sports failed comebacks. I looked it up here. Number one, when Michael Jordan returning to the NBA was number two. Despite a successful first season back, through a short knee injury, his time in Washington paled in comparison to any percentage of his tenure in Chicago. During the 02-03 season, he was an age legend, scored a career-low 20 points per game. Still not bad. In two seasons with the Wizards, never saw the postseason, which led him to criticizing underachieving teammates. The number one failed all-time sports comeback, according to Bleacher Report, Muhammad Ali. Arguably the greatest ever to stitch on a pair of boxing gloves, Ali was a man on a mission in the ring. His fast feet, quick hands, and ruthless mouth gave opponents frights and confidence. In 1979, after 59 fights and only 3 defeats, he retired. But he'd return a year later, 38 years old, only to lose back-to-back fights to Larry Holmes, who gave Ali his first TKO, and Trevor Burbick defeated Ali, finally went away. What was I just thinking? Oh, like Mike Tyson. I mean, Mike Tyson, like after he lost to Buster Douglas, was he?
Well, he had the run, though, before Holyfield, where he was beating the tar out of guys.
Yep.
You know, he had, what, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 fights that were, you know, it looked like vintage Tyson. They were done quickly. He was just pounding guys, and then he ran into a real fighter, Evander Holyfield, who knew how to take a punch, knew how to dodge a punch, knew how to throw a few punches, and I don't know, the second time, obviously, he said, I've had enough of this. I'm going to bite the ear.
Somebody says Tiger Woods. I don't know. Tiger won the Masters in 2019. I mean, certainly...
Kind of which comeback are we talking about?
Yeah, I was going to say, which comeback? And again, like, he shouldn't have had to come back if he would have taken care of his body and stay with his coach. But I don't know. Still winning a major at that age.
Is it Brooks Koepka, who's now back on the tour after LIV, and he says he stinks?
Yes. Roger Clemens, somebody says. Did Clemens hang on too long?
I can't think of a comeback for Roger.
No,
he was always there.
He was always there. Maybe the best comeback, everything, when they got rid of New Coke and then brought back the Old Coke. Well, that's a good comeback. Bud Grant in 84-85 coming back after Les Steckel. Yeah, probably. Harmon Killebrew coming back as a Kansas City Royal was one of those instances where a player should have retired instead of hanging on one more year.
Well, how many of those do we have, though? Not, you know, they didn't leave the game, but it's
just
hung on too long. You leave that team you've been with forever because you get, you know, a 1 or 2 year deal with somebody else and it doesn't work out.
Lindsey Vonn, somebody says. I mean, this year, obviously, she came back to the Olympics and then crashed out, literally.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a failed comeback. A few texts are saying Chi-Chi's. I don't know, man. Like, Jordana, like, a couple weeks ago, she went to Chi-Chi's. She said it was packed. I think people are still going to Chi-Chi's.
Still crushing it now, the new Chi-Chi's?
New Chi-Chi's, but, yeah, you'll never return to the greatness of, you know, prime Chi-Chi's in the 90s. So good suggestions there for worst comeback of all time. It's 2:17. Jamie Yuke is coming up in about 15 minutes. We'll chat with Jamie. Adam in for Chad on a Tuesday on WCCO. Who do we have the winner of the Twins tickets today? I know the Sounder played about an hour ago.
Yes, it was Ben, the lucky winner. He'll be heading with that four-pack to go see Twins White Sox on Yacht Rock Night.
Yacht Rock Night.
Two Fridays from now, and if you haven't won yet, you could buy him, or stay tuned for Jason, your chance to win that another four-pack with him coming up sometime between 3 and 6.
Brought to us by our great friends at Luther Kia of Bloomington. Visit their new showroom today or always at LutherKiaofBloomington.com. Speaking of comebacks, the Trump Department of Justice is finalizing a rule that would allow people with past criminal convictions, felony convictions, to again obtain the right to own firearms, to have their gun rights restored. Nonviolent criminals. And I actually have zero problem with this. I think if you have done your time for a nonviolent crime, that you should be able to own a firearm. I think you should be able to go through the process and not just automatically say, okay, here's your guns back, but I think if we're having a system where you can apply to retain your Second Amendment rights and you can explain your crime, the time you did, and what kind of retribution you've done, how you've become a different person, if at all, I think you should have that right. I understand the hesitancy, especially since the fact that since 1992, at least, that right has not been granted. And the hesitancy of, oh, this is the Trump administration doing something. This is Todd Blanche and the Justice Department. But, I mean, if we seriously take a deep breath and examine this, I don't see any problem with this. Again, if it's nonviolent criminals, let's say I went away for tax evasion, convicted of felony, and I did my time, and now I've done my time, I'm released from prison, and I can file an application to obtain regain my Second Amendment rights, I think I should be able to do that. I mean, I can see the hesitancy, mm-hmm. and I'm not saying somebody who shoots up a school does their time, and I don't know why they'd get released anyway, but then they get released. If you've committed a gun crime, and if guns was part of the reason they sent you away in the first place, no, that's different. I don't want that person to own a firearm anymore.
Hopefully we can all agree on that.
But if you've committed some other crime that doesn't involve guns at all or was not violent at all, not victimless, but there's always a victim in crimes, but I don't see a huge problem. Now you can say, okay, is this where really our priorities right now? I get that, and that's a fair argument to have. But in this instance, I don't think that somebody who is a nonviolent criminal who's done their time shouldn't be able to get their guns back.
I'm of two minds on this, which is not what anybody wants. But I agree with you in the kind of a legal sense that I wouldn't mind if legally that law was changed to allow, like you said, a tax evader, somebody doing a little money laundering or something mm-hmm. like that. Completely nonviolent. Okay, you served your time. You went to prison for however long. We'll give you your Second Amendment rights back. On the other hand, do we really need more guns in this country? And that's where I just look at it pragmatically and say, mm-hmm. you know what? If that's part of the punishment for committing a felony, for being locked up, put away for a while, maybe it's selfishly, maybe it's just, you know, personal feelings on guns and the amount of gun violence we have in this country. You know, if there's that many fewer people that can't legally own a firearm.
Yeah. That's a fair argument,
I'm
too.
Not
I understand.
Horribly, right. I'm not crying a river for anyone.
Right. And maybe I'm taking a very narrow view of who in my mind is thinking of who would be able to get their gun back. And that's what I'm saying. I'm not just saying, okay, it's either violent or nonviolent. If it's not violent, boom, you get your guns back. You know, I want a process where they have to go and be scrutinized. And because you think, okay, let's say a drug dealer, somebody who's dealing drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And convicted of, you know, drug crime, whether it's possession or dealing or whatever it is. Now, technically, that may not be a quote-unquote violent crime. But anytime there's illegal drug dealing going on, there's usually guns involved.
That's true. You could be a violent person and just convicted
right.
on a nonviolent offense.
And if that person tries to apply, I would be fully supportive of a board saying, nope, in this case, no. And again, this all goes back to trust. Do you trust Trump's Justice Department to scrutinize?
The independent Justice Department, right?
To do that. The Justice Department unveiling its new process yesterday for people barred from owning firearms because of past criminal convictions to have the gun rights restored. The launch of the federal firearm rights restoration application process marks one of Attorney General Todd Blanche's first actions as newly minted head of the DOJ and a major victory for Second Amendment advocates. Second Amendment is not a second-class right, and the federal government should not permanently deprive Americans of constitutional rights without regard to whether they pose a danger to public safety, Blanche said in a statement. Back in 1992, convicted felons have long been allowed to petition the government to have their gun rights restored. But in 1992, Congress defunded the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives Program, tasked with processing applications, which effectively barred the federal agency from investigating and approving individual applicants. The new rule aims to circumvent the issue by establishing a new application system using an online portal. Now, yes, okay, online portal, like, are there not human beings looking at eyeballs or looking at applications to this? Are we, like, is this
OpenAI?
OpenAI.
We just asked Grok now that Elon Grok, and Donna
should this person
together.
Own a gun? But I just, again, I think in certain circumstances, it's the same way with voting restoration, how we've kind of reversed course on that. And now in certain circumstances, people who've been convicted of felonies have a right to vote again. Adam, having a gun is a privilege, not a right. If you are a felon, even a nonviolent felon, you broke the law, you use that privilege. Sorry. Okay. I understand that. 651-461-9226.
It is a right. It's in the Bill of Rights.
It is. Yeah, true. Yes. But I mean, I see the point. Like, you know, having rules, losing privileges if you were.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
But saying it's a privilege and not a right.
Correct.
Well, it's in the Bill of Rights.
That would be a right. Yes. Al Capone was never convicted of any murders. This is a texter, but he was convicted of tax evasion.
Now, you want to arm Al Capone again.
Way to go,
Adam Carter.
We've got another text. The great Alphonse Capone went away for tax evasion. He should have got his Tommy gun back.
Alphonse Capone.
When you have a Tommy gun, do you also automatically have to have a big fat cigar in the corner of your mouth?
Yes. And you have to say things like, see here.
Stick him up. Follow up. It is a right, but you lost that right and you became a felon, so you lost both privilege and the right. No, I get that. But again, if you are a white-collar crime and you've done your time and you have returned to a normal life, you're not committing any kind of crimes anymore, and you've retreated to your cabin in the North Woods and you want to do some deer hunting, I guess I have no problem with you applying to try to get those rights reinstated.
Say, be good at the bow.
Of all the things this stupid administration has done, this is one I have the least problem with. I guess that kind of explains my theory on it, too. Considering all the things we can rant and rail over what the Trump administration is doing, I think this one is way down the list. But again, we put that factor into our thought process when thinking about this. So what about a nonviolent drug possession? Does this Trump administration include those people or only white-collar crimes? I assume that if it's technically a nonviolent, you have the right to apply via this online portal, and I think it gets considered. And hopefully, whoever's looking at it, hopefully there are some human beings looking at it who are saying, well, wait a minute, this person, even though technically not violent, you were involved with gang activity, and you were involved with drug dealing, where I'm sure some people had firearms, and that disqualifies you. Yeah, my brother's felony has nothing to do with a firearm. Could not carry or have for 10 years, just teaching them how to hunt. Yeah, again, I'm willing to look at each individual case and saying this person, I think, can be trusted again with having a firearm. All right, we'll take a break. We have traffic and weather coming up and our weekly chat with Jamie Yukis. That's coming up. Adam in for Chad on a Tuesday on News Talk 830 WCCO. It has been a long, long time since we have spoken, Miss Yukis.
I know.
How are you,
Mr. Carter?
I'm okay.
I'm good.
I'm getting old. You know, I have a 51 now. I got a bad eye. Yeah, I've had problems.
What's with your eye?
I had a hole in my retina, and I had surgery on it a couple weeks ago, and it just sucked, and it was awful.
I'm sorry.
It floaties. Getting old sucks, man. It just does.
I get it. I just had a birthday, too.
Happy birthday.
Getting a little bit more reflective, don't they?
Happy birthday. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
How long ago was it?
A couple weeks. I told Chad he was going to have to wish me a happy birthday all month, so you just stepped in.
I was going to say.
That's why I took the day off.
What are Chad's rules on how late can I wish you a happy birthday?
Who cares? He's not here.
Exactly.
Let's break all the rules today.
I saw you, but we are friends on social media, and I saw a couple of weeks ago you were moderating something where John Mayer was part of it.
Yeah, right? John Mayer and I are buds.
Tell me about John Mayer, because I've a tremendous musician, incredible guitarist, funny guy. What was your experience with John Mayer like?
He is such a good guy. I think he's gotten such a bad rap for his dating life,
yeah,
like in the 90s and 2000s. And people don't realize that he's actually been funding research for veterans and PTSD and now female veterans and how their experiences. He's been funding veterans research in the mental health space for the last like 15 years, I think, maybe 20. And just secretly kind of doing it on the side. He had gone to a base camp and met with some troops. No one in his family has served. It wasn't like something where he all of a sudden is like, oh, this is my cause. He met these veterans. They were telling him about their plights and kind of like what it was like coming back from combat and what they were facing and all this stuff. And he just liked the guy who was running the organization because it's all science and research backed. And he started funding their studies. And now has kind of like, the organization has kind of said to him, it's called Heart and Armor, like, John, we could really use you like getting out there and telling people about our research because we need to do more of it. And we kind of need to fund more of it and have, some eyeballs on this. So he finally, the last couple of years, I interviewed him about probably 18 months to 2 years ago now. And he, revealed that he was doing all this. And we ended up going to one of his smaller concerts with a group of veterans. And my therapist ended up being there. And it turns out John Mayer and I have a connection in the mental health community, too. So,
you have the same therapist? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not going to say that.
Okay.
But we know of some of the same people in the mental health space. And now with me like doing the study at Tupperdine, we know some people. So it's very interesting. We've kind of like leaning into mental health and psychology. And the other thing is like people hear John Mayer be very funny on his channel on Sirius.
Yes.
Radio, which I know is a competitor, but whatever. he is so smart, like almost like so. Like you sit down and you talk to him, and you can't believe like how he can pull out facts and figures, just even about the organization that the people running the organization are looking at him like, oh, you remembered that? That's cool.
I was a Grateful Dead fan. And then, he played with Dead & Company, and I never got to see Dead & Company with John Mayer.
Man.
And I'm kind of kicking myself for not doing that. But I've seen so many clips and listened to so many downloads about how he fit in perfectly with that group and how he ingrained himself in that community. And, I've just been a big fan of his for a long time.
It's really interesting with those shows. He was vulnerable with me. He told me that when he first started playing those, he would get so anxious. Because Deadheads are such fanatics of the music, right? So that was like something that was always a little anxiety inducing for him. It's like, oh God, I got to go out and make sure that I do this justice. So that's good.
Have you been able to do that with other celebrities or high profile figures where you've kind of developed like a continuing relationship with them?
Usually like through their organizations or through, some of their, like even their PR people sometimes like will want to set something up or do something. But I don't know what Karamo, who was on Queer Eye. Mm-hmm. I was actually like texting with him this morning. Again, it's always like for me around the mental health space. And a lot of times it connects back to like, hey, can we, can we set up a partnership or can we do a story on this? Or did you see what this person's doing or whatever? He's in the, like, even just this morning I was texting with him and there's been a few others along the way.
I'm so happy to hear that you are leaning into that mental health what is a crisis, I think, in this country. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I battled it. I talk about it very openly when I'm on the show. And the fact that we are so, as a country, so failing miserably in addressing this problem.
Yes.
What would you say is the biggest issue in preventing this country from dealing with our mental health problems?
Well, you know, I think it used to be stigma, but but something that I was
and
talking
it still
about,
is, sadly. Yep.
It's still, I mean, for a number of communities, I will say, yes, it's still, I think Gen Z is really good at being vulnerable and open about a lot of this stuff. So it's somewhat generational. It's somewhat, you know, cultural in some aspects still. But I, you know, we were talking, I had a class last night, I have class tonight, and a group of us were talking about a couple different things that are happening in the news right now. And of course, with me being in news, we ended up discussing them a little bit further probably than most other classes were. But, you know, one is Hayden Panettiere. Like, I think what's people should think about is, like, here's a woman who did battle addiction, clearly was still battling addiction, you know, but like she was doing all the things that we tell people to do. She was being vulnerable. She was going out and doing interviews. She had written a memoir. And I think it's the realization, you know, with that case in particular of, first of all, when it comes to addiction, the relapse rate is really, really high. And we have to learn how to support people and talk to people about, you know, like not shaming them if that's a route that they go down, and making sure that we continue to get them the help that they need. And at the same time, you know, just because you come out and you say that you've tackled this problem doesn't mean that you're not going to continue to have demons and continue to need support and, you know, and need to lean further into the mental health space. I think sometimes we think, oh, they're talking about it. They wrote the memoir. They're out there. They're a star. They look beautiful. So they must be cured, quote unquote. And I think it's getting the idea out of your head. Like, if you do lean into this, like, you're never really cured.
Nope.
And whatever that means, quote unquote, you know, like, no one is normal. There's no such thing as normal, quote unquote. Right. Like, so I think it's like identifying that and realizing that. The other case is that woman out on the East Coast. Is it Clancy, the mother?
Yes.
Who had this psychosis, postpartum psychosis. You know, we were talking in class. We also, like, the mental health community can fail people. And I think there needs to be a conversation around women and mental health, and specifically around postpartum, you know, issues and how we support people and what medications and what does the team look like. And sometimes it is getting a team of people together to make sure everyone's on the same page. So I think I could talk to you about this for like,
I could too. I could too, because it's fascinating. And I think we need to be able to talk about it more and be open to ideas. And especially, you know, when you talk about addiction, because my family, I've come from generations of people who've battled addiction too. And like when you look at it, whether it's a family member or somebody like a superstar that you follow, that you like, you know that they're like in recovery, or that maybe they've been certain amount of years sober, and then something happens where their addiction, they relapse, and we have like this feeling of disappointment. And I understand that feeling, but it should be more of, instead of disappointment, we should be like, we should help that person.
Well, and it's recognizing like we are all human. So even if you don't have an addictive personality or you don't have a substance use issue, I'm sure you've screwed up in other things that you wish you had done better at.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's recognizing that that's that person's demon and you have your own demons, and like, you know, figuring out how to not shame other people and not be judgmental. But, you know, I think it's interesting that conversation about addiction came up a week or two ago when Brad Pitt said that he had been sober for 7 years and now he's starting to drink. And some, you know, if you go down the Reddit rabbit hole, I mean, it's like, you know, people are bashing him like, well, he did the 12-step program, this and that. But it's also, the interesting thing is, like, as research goes on, things change, right? So like in terms of alcoholism, we now call it alcohol use disorder.
Yep.
It's a substance use disorder. And there are different categories of it. And there can be different supports for people in that. And some people may have a substance use disorder and they may continue to use, but on a lesser basis. And so you have to kind of, as long as they're not being a harm to themselves and other people, you have to kind of allow people to figure out that space. Right? Like what is the right space for them? And so I think it's also labeling people, right? Like, you know, I know even within my own life, people have been like, oh, you've been in therapy for a while. Or like, well, what do you have? And it's like, well, I've actually never been diagnosed with anything, but I continue to go to therapy because I feel better going to therapy, you know?
Right.
So I think it's not labeling, not judging, you know, but that's hard to do in a society that, like, you know, loves reality TV. And
yeah. We like to judge. We like to judge people. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that the therapy thing, too, is like, and I'm guilty of this as anybody. It's like the only time it's like, well, I got to talk to the therapist is when, like, I got crap going on. It's like it's the times that I don't have crap going on that I should be going to.
So that you have the tools.
Like when
you have the tools.
And when I feel good, it's like, okay, I'm feeling good. Let's explain why I'm feeling good and let's figure out how I can try to do that more often.
Well, I don't know. So I also this weekend, if you were on my social media, I went to Noah Kahn. And I think he says something really beautiful in his documentary, which is on Netflix. But if people don't know, he's kind of like a folk pop singer. And he became huge during COVID because
he was just here
about mental health.
Yep, he was just here.
Yeah,
Target Center or Target Field. Yeah, Target Field. Yep.
And I saw he thanked them because Minnesota feels like Vermont to him somewhat. And I could see that with some of his songs like Northern Attitude and other stuff. But, you know, he says something really beautiful of like I'm not like maybe 100% tackling what's wrong with me, but I'm like, I'm getting closer to it and I'm not going to let it like swallow me and then continue to the next generation. And I think it's that it's just like wanting to be better, right? Like continuing to just want to be better.
Better for you and better for everybody else around you.
Right.
How's your life otherwise? You don't have to get into great detail, but I mean, things going well?
Yeah, I'm good. I mean, you know, it's so busy. Like, I can't believe my stepson goes back to school tomorrow, which I know you, I know. Can you believe that? Mid-August. Like, for me as the Minnesota kid, didn't have to go back to after Labor Day. I'm like, this isn't fair.
I know.
But, you know, things, it's just everything. I just feel like everything's, you started this conversation with, like, you know, feeling old. It's like everything's just moving too fast.
Too fast, right? But at the same time, you got to embrace it.
Yes. Yep. Oh, my. Yeah, you
can't
do.
Defeat time. You can't. Time is undefeated.
Well, and that's what I might I'm going to say to you, too. The other thing that I've kind of been leaning into lately is I feel like we become, you know, when we're talking about mental health and stuff, it's like we're trying to optimize everything. And I think that's wrong. Like, I think we should just be able to rest or like go have fun or like not work or like call in sick and just like have a day.
And
we don't have to be perfect at everything.
And say no. No. No is a full sentence, and we should be able to say no more often.
You bet.
Thank you.
Betcha.
Thank you for not saying no for joining me because Chad is off. So always a delight to talk to you, and I love this conversation. We just got a text. Thank you guys for talking about mental health. Thank you for working on it and on yourself and helping others do it. I think that is tremendous.
It's a lot of work.
Yep. You and me both, sister. Thanks, Jamie.
Take care, Adam. Yep. Good to talk to you.
See ya.
Yep,
Jamie Yukis, 251 on News Talk 830 WCCO.